Good morning. Our second case is 2020-15 BST Ohio Corporation et al. Versus Evan Gary Wolgang et al. For the appellant, Mr. Unger.
Thank you. Good morning, Chief Justice, members of the court. May it please the court, I'm Mike Unger on behalf of the appellants. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for a rebuttal. While the consequences and the stakes here are high, the question before the court is straightforward and indeed was well stated by the 8th District Court of Appeals in the very first line of its opinion. And I quote, whether revised code 2711.13 requires a trial court wait 3 months before confirming an arbitration award when the party opposing confirmation appears and informs the trial court that he or she intends to file a motion to vacate within the 3 month timeframe set forth in revised code section 2711.13, close quote. Though the statutory answer to that question is a clear no, the 8th District Court of Appeals answered yes. And we are now before you hoping to correct that error. Applying ordinary rules of statutory construction and interpretation, as well as prior rulings, this shouldn't be a close case. The 8th District's yes response to that question runs afoul of the plain statutory framework. And the analysis behind the decision is demonstrably flawed.
Mr. Unger, can I stop you?
Yeah, absolutely.
If the trial court can rule before the three month period of time to object, ask to set aside, et cetera, then how does the rule have any teeth?
So, well, the rule has plenty of teeth. You've got 3 months in which to take certain action. But if you are confronted with an application to confirm, then you need to respond to that application to confirm before the hearing on the application to confirm with a motion to vacate or modify in the event that that is what you wish to do. Again, compliance with the rule is easy, perhaps best evidenced by the fact that the other side went the day after the application to confirm was filed in this case, went to California and filed a petition to vacate. There was no difficulty in doing so, and no difficulty in complying with the rule, except they, Your Honor.
Let me go back and ask, where is that in the rule, that you have 3 months unless an application to confirm is filed, then it cuts your time, then you have, is there something that says if that happens, then you have 3 days or 7 days or 10 days in which to respond? Because if there isn't clear guidelines, isn't this just whoever gets to the courthouse or the clerk's office first?
Well, again, that the argument that you're articulating is not unlike the argument that the folks in the Amanda Scott Publishing.
It's not an argument. I'm like, it's just a question for me.
Yeah, yes, the question that's the question that's being posed, though, syncs up with, thank you, Your Honor, syncs up with the same argument that was advanced in the Amanda Scott Publishing versus Legacy Marketing Group. And the 10th District, again, confronted that head on, calling that argument specious and finding that while we are dealing with a statute of limitations, a limitations period within which certain actions must be taken. It's no different than a compulsory counterclaim. And I dare say, you know, the action that is required under the law is very simple. One simply needs to file their motion to vacate. Coming into court and orally expressing.
Where is that required too? Particularly in this case, where confronted with the application, counsel informed the court that there was an intent to file the motion, but still within the 3 week period. So I know you're saying that we intend to do so shouldn't abate the proceedings, didn't necessarily.
Saying that we intend to do so is not the same as filing. It's no different than if one were to say to a court, well, I intended to file something within the statute of limitations, and yet if you didn't file within the statute of limitations, it's a nullity. It doesn't matter. You have to file in the court. You have to file the motion to vacate in the court of common pleas. You have to do so before the court grants the application and confirms the arbitration award. I think that's very clear, as other courts who have wrestled with this.
Mr. Unger, what if the application is filed on a Monday and the trial court rules on a Tuesday?
Can't do it, Your Honor. You have to give 5 days notice per the statute. So the other side would have at least 5 days notice. And I would argue that the better practice would be to file that motion to vacate. If you look at what was filed in California, it's just one line. You simply indicate they indicated that they intended to vacate, and I quote, on the basis that, quote, the arbitrator exceeded her powers. That's what they said. That's what they said in the California application. That's what they said in their untimely filed motion to vacate that they ultimately filed here. And again, it's no different than a compulsory counterclaim to which certain statute of limitations apply. There may be certain circumstances in which you have to respond with that motion to vacate, if that's the way you're going, sooner than the expiration of the 90 days.
And I understand what you're saying. Well, I guess my biggest problem or concern is, what puts opposing counsel on notice other than your arguments here at the time of that this all happened? What puts opposing counsel on notice that your 3-month time period is shortened and you must file your motion?
Yes.
Good. Within a shorter period of time if there's an application to confirm the settlement.
Three things come to mind, Your Honor. First, the plain language of the two statutes that are at issue. Second, a little bit of legal research would give you guidance, would take you right to Amanda Scott Publishing, which makes clear that you ignore the requirement to file your motion to vacate prior to the hearing at your peril. That's a quote from that case and from that decision. And then the final thing would be the trial court, in my opinion, went above and beyond here. The trial court, on the day of the hearing, the trial judge, who's just following the statute, says to the other side, and I quote, I'm the one ruling on the case, and what I have is a party that has moved to confirm, which should have generated then a motion to vacate or modify, right? And I would argue, Your Honor, in response to all your questions, opposing counsel wasn't confused at all about this, because opposing counsel's response to the trial court's inquiry was as follows, and I quote, well, perhaps a motion to vacate could still be filed before the end of the day. And of course, that's all happening some three weeks after they've already filed their collateral attack, their motion to vacate, their application to vacate in California. So they well knew what the statutory framework said. They should have been aware of the Amanda Scott guidance, and they certainly were warned by the trial court that, to quote Amanda Scott, they were at peril if they didn't file their motion to vacate in response in that court, not in California, in Cuyahoga County Common Pleas Court before that trial judge. And if they didn't do it, they were at peril of that order, of that arbitration award being confirmed. So they knew it, and that's manifested in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. No provision, and I'll use that as a segue. What they're saying is, all we have to do is come into court now and express our intent. But that statement of intent, which the court can readily see, that became the fulcrum of the Eighth District decision when it reversed the trial court. And again, to revisit it, the trial court had simply done what it was supposed to do. It followed the statutes precisely. I joked, and now I'll take a risk and go out on a limb here. It's a pleasure to be in front of the Ohio Supreme Court at 61 years old. I never thought I'd be in front of you where the complaint was that the trial judge had acted too promptly, right? The trial court had acted exactly as the statutes prescribed. And it's left to stand, according to the 8th District Court of Appeals. All it now takes to deprive the winning party of its statutorily prescribed right to prompt confirmation. And going back to your questions, Justice Stewart, there are plenty of reasons, and I don't think I need to describe them to your honor nor to any other member of the Supreme Court. There are plenty of reasons and exigencies that might militate in favor of needing in an order in aid of execution from a court enforcing an arbitration award. So now, if this is left to stand, all the other side has to do to deprive the winning party of that right to prompt summary confirmation and enforcement is come in and express an intent in the future to file a motion to vacate within the 3-month period, and boom, what do you have? You've got an automatic stay. That is engrafting language into the statutory framework that exists nowhere. And again, the 10th District twice confronted this same question and the same arguments that I believe led to Justice Stewart's questions, and twice reached a completely opposite conclusion. Two well-reasoned opinions that say, once confirmation is sought, your option as the one opposing it is not to sit back and do nothing. You can't rely, you can't point to 27-11-13 to delay confirmation proceedings for up to 3 months. That is not an option. And by the way, that decision was completely consistent with the Galleon decision. When I say that decision, it was actually two decisions coming out of the 10th District Court of Appeals, Goldsmith and Amanda Scott Marketing. And what did they do? They took this court's decision in Galleon and extended it. What did this court say in Galleon? Galleon, this court made crystal clear, and I quote, "The language of revised code 27-11-13 is clear, unmistakable, and above all, mandatory. 27-11-13 states the time frame in which the motion must be made. If the General Assembly did not intend for the statute of limitations in 27-11-13 to apply, it would have expressly excluded 27-11-10 and others. 27-11-13 provides a 3-month period within which a party must file a motion to vacate, modify, or correct an arbitration award. Again, it did not impose in any way an automatic stay when the other side has gone in seeking prompt confirmation of the award. Now, because of the 8th District Court of Appeals decision, we come before this court truly as the court of last resort, seeking much needed guidance to both the lower courts and practitioners like me and their clients about when they can expect the court to confirm an arbitration award and whether the mere invocation of this intent to move to vacate effectively staves off under Ohio law confirmation and enforcement for at least 3 months. Again, we submit a result that was never intended by the legislature. Now, the appellees conceded in their brief that the rule of law that they are attempting to advance and defend is tailored narrowly to their situation. And indeed, to credit to them, they conceded that it might not be appropriate in all circumstances. They summarized that position at page 8 of their merit brief, where they say, quote, "In short, Wolgang doesn't contend that at all times, in every case, there's an absolute inviolable 3-month period in which to bring a motion to vacate, but only that this is not a case requiring departure from the time period prescribed by the legislature."
Counsel, you're into your 2-minute rebuttal time. I just wanted you to know. You can keep going.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll make one last point and then I'll thank you very much. That time period prescribed by the legislature that they referred to is precisely what I just went over for you, that the Supreme Court defined in that Galleon decision to be a statute of limitations, never some 3-month stay of proceedings. Thank you. I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Okay. Mr. Carrick.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. I am Stephen Carrick, and along with Colleen O'Neill of the Calfee Halter and Griswold firm, represent Appalese Gary Walgang and Maslin Management Company.
So, counsel, let me just understand, based on Mr. Unger's presentation just now, is it your position that once the arbitration is decided and an award is made, the case is frozen for 3 months as to the party that prevailed, but not to the party that could file the motion to vacate, modify, or correct the award? Is that, do I have a right?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but what our position is that a trial court cannot determine whether or not a timely motion to vacate, correct, or modify an arbitration award has been filed until after the expiration of the statutory 3-month period within which that party has been granted the right to file such a motion.
But counselor, that's not before us though, is it, or the court, whether there has been a timely filing? It really is whether your side or the parties has responded in a way that precludes the trial court from ruling on the application to confirm the award. I mean, if yes, you have the 3-month period of time, but then if there is an application to confirm, then the opposing party gets to not do anything and the trial court is supposed to not do anything in response?
Well, the trial, as was held in the Schwartz, well, it wasn't actually held, so pardon me, but as the reasoning in the Schwartz v. Realty Spec case, which reasoning was also adopted in the 8th District unanimous opinion here, the way to construe both 2711-09 and 2711-13 is to wait for the 3-month period before you rule upon an application to confirm. That
counsel,
is what
counsel, a motion for stay was filed after the confirmation motion was, correct?
Correct.
That was denied by the trial court.
It was ultimately, right? I'm sorry.
Yeah. So do you think the trial court abused its discretion in denying that motion to stay here?
Yes. And in fact, that was our second point of error in the lower court in the 8th District, which the 8th District found to be moot as a result of its ruling that the trial court should have waited for the 3-month period in the face of our statement that we intended to move to vacate and in fact had filed a petition to vacate, which by the way is a very different animal in California than it is in Ohio. So the petition to vacate in California, and I believe this was explained, is in the nature of a new action of a complaint. And parties are given 30 days within which to respond, and then a separate motion would be filed. So it's a very different animal.
Why didn't you just file that in Ohio?
Because the arbitration agreement in question enables any party to file an action to confirm or modify or vacate the arbitration award in any court of competent jurisdiction.
They had filed an application to confirm. Why didn't you just move to vacate in Ohio?
Eventually we did move to vacate in Ohio, and we did so timely. That application is pending. We did so within the 3-month period, contrary to what Mr. Unger referenced when he said we filed an untimely motion to vacate. We did not. We filed a timely motion to vacate in Ohio. That is pending.
Can you vacate an arbitration award that's already been confirmed?
That's the whole point of this appeal. That's exactly the reason why you can't confirm an arbitration award on a mere 5 days' notice of a hearing when you've been told that you're going to move to vacate it. You have to be given the statutory right to do that.
You say statutory right, but there's no language in the statute that says that, is there?
Yes, 27.11.13 most certainly says that a party who seeks to vacate, modify, or correct an arbitration award has up to 3 months within which to do so. And it's interesting that the opposing side has not made any reference in their argument to the long applauded and applied rule of impari materia that this court has applied to statutes that are in the same statutory section.
Let me ask about that, because one of the statutes says you can hold a hearing in 5 days, right? Very short time frame. So if you're right, your position is right, doesn't it that read those 5 days out of the statute?
No, it doesn't read those 5 days out of the statute. It makes it harmonizes that and says that in the event that the 3 months has passed, you can then have your hearing within 5 days. The question is not the period of time within which the hearing must be held.
I thought it was 5 days from the filing of the motion to confirm.
Well, it says that the hearing must be on 5 days' notice. In fact, in this case, that did not even happen. They filed on the very same day that the arbitration award was issued, December 6th. We got notice of a hearing on December 22, the Saturday before Christmas. We did that there would be a hearing on 5 days' notice from that date, December 27, the day after, the 2 days after Christmas. We filed on December 24 the motion to stay or to continue the hearing. And in consistent with what we just said, we believe the court did abuse its discretion in not doing that and giving us the opportunity to file a proper and well-researched and well-discussed and well-considered motion to vacate. I mean, the application to confirm under the Brookdale case.
Counsel, were you intending on doing that? I thought you said you wanted to move that to California.
Well, we wanted.
You had already instigated that in California.
That's correct. We did that in California, and that was our preference. However, if the trial court had ruled that we could not proceed in California in order to preserve our rights in Ohio, then we certainly intended and informed the court that we would proceed in Ohio. And we, in fact, did proceed in Ohio by filing a timely motion to vacate. That was not our preference, but that is certainly what we would do if compelled to do so.
But you filed the motion to vacate subsequent to the confirmation, the court's confirmation, correct?
Correct.
All right, and that's the problem here. If you would have, I mean, instead of filing the motion to stay, filed a motion to vacate or modify or whatever else, before the hearing on confirmation, we wouldn't be here.
Perhaps we would be here. I mean, I don't know what would have happened at that time.
Well, we wouldn't be here on your issue. You would have timely, the sequence of events would have unfolded and whatever the result, maybe you would have been here. Is it your position that the prevailing party cannot file a motion to confirm for 3 months after the arbitration award is made?
No, that's not our position. Our position is that they can proceed, but that the trial court cannot grant that in the face of a statement and a proper appearance by the opposing party that they will be filing a motion to vacate. And in fact, their reliance on Amanda Scott is misplaced, because what happened in Amanda Scott is there was no response. Nobody who had any authority to to represent the corporation appeared and informed that trial court that they would respond. That case was distinguished by the 8th District. It was distinguished by us in our filings. And that is why Amanda Scott went forward, because they were, that court was never informed.
Well, Counselor, what then prevents one side from, if there's a petition filed to confirm the arbitration award and the other side doesn't file a motion in the 3-month time period to set aside the award or modify it, et cetera, then 3 months delay has happened unnecessarily. And particularly if time is of the essence for the party who has been, who's gotten the award. So why would we engraft that sort of delay, unnecessary delay in a case? Or are you saying we shouldn't, but your case is different because you want us to take the fact that there was an intent to file equivalent to actually filing?
Well, there was an intent to file and there was an actual filing. And in this particular case, there was no emergency to get something filed and to, pardon me, to get an arbitration award confirmed within such a short period of time that effectively precluded us from presenting a well-reasoned and argument that we would make of an, which we understand would be an uphill climb to overturn our arbitration award. And what the other side is doing here is writing out of existence the 3-month period of time within which we may take action. And that is what we object to. And you would not be engrafting anything onto the statute. In fact, it would be just the other way around. What the other side is asking you to do is engraft onto the statute language that says you have 3 months within which to file a motion to vacate, unless the other side files an application to confirm, in which case you better drop everything, stop everything, and file your motion to vacate that the legislature gave you 3 months within which to do.
But isn't that just the plain meaning of the statutes taken together?
No, I don't believe that the plain meaning of the statute says that you have to file your application or motion to vacate in less than 3 months. It gives you 3 months. That's exactly what it gives you.
So let's play out for me then what would happen if the confirmation occurred and then you file your motion to vacate later on. How does the court deal with it? What happens?
Well, that's exactly why the application to confirm should not be granted before the 3-month period of time.
Sure, but what would you do if it did happen?
Well, it's exactly what we've done here. We would file our motion to vacate, which we did timely. We would appeal any decision of the lower court, which affirmed the arbitration award, and we would be exactly where we are. I mean, we have a right under the statute to file our motion within the 3-month period of time. That is mandatory under Galleon. What was not read under Galleon is that the portion of that decision which states, we hold that RC 2711.13 provides a 3-month period within which a party must file a motion to vacate, modify, or correct an arbitration award, and that it is mandatory. I would agree that if you go beyond the 3-month period, you're out of luck. But we did
counsel,
not go beyond.
Counsel, what's your California filing? What do you characterize that as? Is that a motion to vacate?
It's a in California we call it a petition to vacate, and it is in the nature of a complaint, a new action, and then subsequently you would file a motion, but it is the
a motion to do what? Subsequent motion to do what?
The petition to vacate is in the nature of a motion in California, but it cannot be adjudicated until the parties have appeared and until they have answered the petition. And then, like a motion for summary judgment or something along those lines, one of the parties would file a notice of motion. In California, we file a notice of motion and we set a hearing date that would be for at least 16 court days out. The other side would be given an opportunity to oppose, and we would be given an opportunity to reply, and then it'd be a
counsel, I'm trying to see whether that filing in California had any impact on your duty within the 3 months. And you're not arguing that it is the equivalent of filing a motion to vacate in the Ohio court.
Well, it is the equivalent of asking the court to vacate the arbitration award. It is not a formal motion by which.
All right, that's all I wanted to know. I just wanted to make sure you weren't, that wasn't the case. Thank you.
Yes. What we were arguing and what we continue to argue is that we had 3 months within which to file in Ohio if it were required, but that we filed our petition in California within any period of time that was permitted.
Mr. Carrick, could you just elaborate a little more on how you distinguish the Amanda Scott publishing case?
Yes, in Amanda Scott, what happened there is the arbitration award was issued against a corporation. The corporation's president showed up and said, we're here, and they didn't really even file any papers or anything. And the court in Amanda Scott said, well, you can't be here because you're not a lawyer. And therefore, there was no response. The court declared it to be a nullity. That is very different than what we have here. Here, we appeared properly representing a corporate entity and an individual. We informed the court that we intended to move to vacate. In Amanda Scott, there was no such intention expressed, and the Amanda Scott representative was not even permitted to really speak because that person was not a lawyer. So there was no response given. Here, it's very different. We did give a response. We moved to stay. We asked for a continuance, and we informed the court that we intended to file a motion to vacate. All of those things were permitted to be done under the statute, and that's exactly what we did. So that's the difference. In Amanda Scott, there was no intention to vacate expressed to the court that the court recognized.
Counselor, can I ask you one quick question? Can I ask you one quick question for your time? I know you're over your time, but in 27.11.13, part of in the second paragraph says, for the purposes of the motion, any judge who might make an order to stay the proceedings in an action brought in the same court may permissive make an order to be served with the notice of a motion staying the proceeding. So how I read that is that if there is a motion to vacate, modify, or correct, the court has the discretion on whether or not to stay, to grant a stay. Does that hurt your position?
I don't read that exactly the same way you do, Your Honor. With due respect, I believe that how we read that is that the application to stay the proceedings or continue the proceedings must be made in the same court in which the application is filed, and that's what we did. It does not say anywhere within 27.11.13 that the motion to vacate must be made in the same court. And that's why we filed in California.
Okay, and a quick question. Does it matter that the 27.11.13 talks about serving the adverse party within 3 months and not the filing part? There's nothing in the statute that talks about you have 3 months to file. It talks about 3 months to serve. Does that matter?
I don't believe that it matters, especially in this case, because we did serve within the 3 month period of time. And we certainly served the petition to vacate in California within the 3 month period of time. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe that to be a really distinguishing language in the statute that is of import here.
Fair enough. Thank you. And
if I might, one last thing, if there really is such an emergency that a mere 3 months cannot be waited upon after an arbitration that took 2 years to conclude, well, there are certainly other procedures by which a party wanting to confirm an arbitration award can preserve the status quo. In fact, the arbitration agreement at issue here specifically states that any party can seek injunctive relief in a court, even though there's an arbitration provision. And if there were truly any harm here that was of such exigent circumstance, certainly actions could be taken. And I appreciate that I'm over my time. So.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, so that emergency exception appear that you just talked about appears nowhere in the statute. The statute makes it clear if an application to confirm is filed and there's no motion to vacate, the court shall thereupon issue the award confirming a thereupon dictionary definition. One of the dictionary definitions of thereupon is immediate. I want to say this: had they filed that motion to vacate. Had they filed that motion to vacate instead of their motion to stay, which was filed 3 days before the hearing in this case, we wouldn't be here. There's no way we'd be here. Counsel says that that I indicated that their filing of their ultimate filing of the motion to vacate was untimely, and suggests that I'm incorrect in that characterization. I say it was untimely because it was filed after the award had already been confirmed, after they had been warned that they were at risk of having the award confirmed if they didn't file it. And indeed, I say it's untimely because it was filed after the other side had already filed their notice of appeal of the confirmation order. Counsel invoked Schwartz versus Realty Spec. Schwartz doesn't apply here. Okay. There, the appellate court reversed confirmation of the award because the court in that case, unlike the court in this case, had never even conducted the hearing required by statute.
Isn't it possible when you have to quickly file a motion to vacate, when you get that 5-day notice, that you could file a simple motion and then supplement it at some point later?
Precisely, Your Honor. Simple, again, just as they did. The record evidence, to the extent that the court, the Eighth District, indicated that that subsequent filing that Mr. Carrick just referred to wasn't even part of the record. It nonetheless got blurted out in their briefs, and I just have to deal with it. It wasn't not properly before the court, in my opinion, as part of the official record. But nonetheless, it just invoked the exact same language. It's identical language to what they filed the day after we filed our application to confirm. It's exactly the same operative language that they filed in California. It's all of one sentence. And that's, again, to Your Honor's question, that's all that needs to be filed here. So if instead of wasting their time running out to California and filing that collateral proceeding, and instead of wasting their time filing a motion to vacate or their motion to stay, they instead just took the time to file their motion to vacate, we wouldn't be sitting here right now.
Counselor, can I, on 27-1109, the sentence you're referring to when you open up your rebuttal, it says, thereupon the court shall grant the order, the application to confirm the award, and enter judgment thereon, as you said, unless the award is vacated, modified, or corrected, or prescribed. So how is that in timing? Because this seems to suggest that if an application to confirm the award is filed, the trial court must grant it unless the court has already vacated or modified or corrected the award.
How again, it invokes the, it invokes the, it, again, you have to read it. if you want to challenge it, you simply have to file the motion to vacate that Justice Bruner just talked about. And then the flip side of what counsel was talking about, of course, there may be exigent circumstances where it ought not be confirmed immediately because the motion to vacate is well taken. Because in this case, even though it was a very well-known, highly reputable arbitrator, because the arbitrator may have exceeded the scope of her authority, because the arbitrator may have been corrupt or biased or something like that, or it needs to be modified due to a mathematical calculation. There may be circumstances in which the court sees a prima facie case there and then sets a scheduling order that is comfortable for the trial judge in dealing with that. But absent that, what we have here is a non-filing. They didn't file. And again, the language in 2711.13 is mandatory. It uses the word file, and we all know what file means. And they didn't file it. They didn't file their motion to vacate. And the rule of law that they're arguing for, there were multiple questions of Mr. Carrick of, you know, what is it that you're really positing here? Again, and whether I heard him clearly or not, they made it crystal clear what they're arguing for. And it's a bad rule of law, I submit, and one that this Supreme Court should not adopt. And it's, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.
Thank you.
Marcia, will you call a recess, please?
The court will now adjourn for a short recess.